Hello, fellow Earth folks. I'm Annie Gigg, GYG, here on CFRU 93.3 FM and CFRU.ca, available wherever you are in the world. Warm welcome to Better Me, Better World, the show for growth-minded change makers, difference makers, and happiness makers. In episode 2, we delved into holistic wellness, intentional personal transformation, aka the BU journey, and the first steps on that journey of becoming a youer you. In this episode, episode 3, we're considering who you are right here, right now, at the start of this journey. Are you standing tall in your starting place? Do you respect and have confidence in your present self? My response tends to vary from, yeah, for sure, to, yes, I guess so, maybe, depending. My yesteryear self, however, would have decidedly said no in answer to all those questions, especially at a time when I was trying to screw up the courage to become a speaker to inspire personal transformation. Back then, I spoke to a mentor about my passion, saying I didn't know how I could ever do that because, I said to him, I keep learning more and more as I go along, and concepts that in the moment of my grasping them are exciting and enlightening. With my subsequent deepening learning, in hindsight, they seem elementary or unformed. Without being an expert, fully enlightened, and completely knowledgeable on the topic, I asked him, how can I possibly stand up and talk to others about it? My mentor assured me that wherever I'm at on my life journey, there will be others who haven't yet traveled the same distance or along the exact same path that I have, and who may benefit from my learning shared from my unique perspective. In essence, he was telling me to be confident in my present quarter moon self. Very recently, I came across a tidbit by Camilla Tolnau, a Danish writer and poet, that reassured me of this once again. Be the moon and inspire people, even when you're far from full. No matter where you're presently at, regardless of how full you are, you have your own shine. And where you're at is the perfect starting place to stand tall in, to begin your inward journey. George Eliot said, "It's never too late to be what you might have been." Whatever your age at, it's exactly the right age to journey on. And whatever place on the spectrum between 0 and 100% you perceive your self-awareness to be at, your self-confidence, your capabilities, that's the perfect starting place. If you were a caterpillar, inevitably to become a butterfly, wherever you're currently at in the process of metamorphosis is the perfect starting place to carry on the transformation. You are where you are now because of where you've been. If others in your life appear to you to be further along on the journey, i.e. they're seemingly doing much better than you, or not as far along, i.e. they're struggling more than you are, that's an illusion. There is no one else making the same journey that you are. No one but you can become youer or a better you. No one else is on your path or standing at your starting place. Comparing yourself to another is an insult to who you are. Your unique history, your singular story, has brought you to your one and only starting place, as it has for everyone. C.S. Lewis said, "You can't go back and change the beginning, but you can start where you are and change the ending." How strongly do you agree that there's nothing wrong with where you are right now? It is what it is. The sum total of everything that's gone before, even if you don't want to stay there. Can you stand tall in your starting place, confident that you have what it takes to become whom you were born to be, or otherwise act as if you have that confidence even if you don't feel it? To move forward out of your starting place, even with this confidence real or acted, it's so important to know that there are things about yourself that you don't know. What happens when you don't know what you don't know? Consider this. I do know I don't know how to sing very well. Knowing that prevents me from offering my services to sing at a wedding, for example. That would just be nasty. But no harm done. because I know that I don't know how to sing well, and so I don't sing at weddings. But what if I didn't know that I didn't know how to sing well, and in my ignorance, I offered my singing services? I would painfully embarrass myself and horrify the bride and groom. Not knowing how to sing well is something I do know about myself. I also do know I don't know how to speak Mandarin. I do know I don't know how to play chess. I do know I don't know why Earth is receiving rapid radio bursts from outer space. I do know I don't know how to cure cancer. I do know, or I can say I'm aware of, many things I don't know. Being aware, knowing that I don't know how to speak Mandarin, enables me to decide if I want to know how to speak Mandarin, and if so, sign up for lessons. Knowing what I don't know gives me an opportunity to decide if I do want to know. I can choose to change something. But not knowing what it is that you don't know eliminates that opportunity to choose change. You unknowingly stay stuck. The author Jim Witt said, "If you lack self-awareness, you can't change. Why should you? As far as you're concerned, you're doing everything right." Looking back at earlier chapters in my life story, I can see that. I'm going to share here again an incident I spoke about in episode 2. Back in my teen years in the early 70s, I stumbled across a personal development book of some sort. I recall quickly dismissing it as rubbish. At the time, I was solidly planted in my religion of birth, unquestioningly adhering to the tenets of my faith. To my mind, I didn't need any self-proclaimed personal development guru. I knew all the answers I needed in life were found within my religion. I also did know I didn't know much about the New Age movement, and I didn't care to. But it's only in hindsight that I can see I didn't know what I didn't know. The then me didn't realize that I didn't understand how my religious upbringing brought me to dismiss that book as rubbish. It's interesting for me to speculate how different my life trajectory might have been if I had known I didn't comprehend the impact of my religious learning on my decision to toss aside the book. Might I have been curious enough to explore the role of my religious beliefs in my decision not to read the book? And where might that have taken me? Wisdom begins with an awareness of our own ignorance, said David Brooks, commentator and writer for the New York Times. You can probably easily create a list of many things you know you don't know. I provided some of my own examples earlier. Let's call this list A, the known unknowns. Now, let's hypothetically create a list B, the unknown unknowns, which obviously you can't actually create because you don't know what you don't know. I'm suggesting this only to illustrate the point that your development, growth, transformation, journeying essentially involves the moving of listed items from list B over to list A, making the unconscious conscious. Once they land in list A, then you are enabled to decide what to do about what you now know you don't know. There are many influencers that have shaped you into who you are in this moment, and many of those influences you may be unconscious of. Ideally, talking about them will contribute to the process of moving items from your list B, unconsciousness, to list A, consciousness. Which is more influential? The nature versus nurture debate is one of the oldest philosophical topics of discussion. Are you more the product of your inherited genes or the environment you were born into? In recent years, scientists and psychologists have not been so much focused on the debate as it's now known how complex it is. There is not a simple way to disentangle the many, many genetic factors that interact with each other, and the great variety of environmental factors that interact with each other, and the ridiculously huge number of possible outcomes when all those genetic factors interact with all those environmental factors. You cannot disown your genetic inheritance. Let's think of it as the clay you're made from. but you can increase your understanding of what the clay is composed of, as well as enhance your awareness of how your environment from pre-birth to the current moment has influenced your present shape. Perhaps think of your environment as the potter shaping the clay vessel that's you. You'll never know everything you don't know about the clay and the potter that has shaped and continues to shape you, but with growing awareness of what you don't know, you experience increasing opportunities to now pursue learning around what you don't know. It's like you're becoming increasingly empowered to direct the potter's fingers to shape you as you want to be shaped, instead of passively being shaped by them. At this point, I'm simply talking about influencers, not exploring how to deal with them. The talking is to prompt consideration of how awesomely unique and incomparable you are, and how you being the outcome of everything that's happened in your life and your responses to those happenings is to have no blame or judgment of yourself or others attached. Your consideration of your influencers is to extend only to observing them, being aware of them. They are what they are. You are who you are. I'm posing influencer questions for your reflection. Let's start at the very beginning. A very good place to start, as Mary Poppins sings, in utero. In the womb, you're being formed from clay composed of the ingredients provided by your mother and father. How much control do you have over the composition of the clay you're being formed with? In what ways might the composition of the clay impact you? As well, your physical, mental, and emotional health and well-being as a pre-born human are impacted significantly by the behaviors of your mother and the environment she lives in. How much control do you have over the food she eats, whether or not she uses alcohol or drugs, or smokes cigarettes, or gets sufficient sleep and exercise, or is calm or anxious, or lives in a quiet or noisy environment? In what ways might your mother's behavior and environment impact the pre-born you? Then you're born and raised in a certain place and certain time in the world. How much control do you have over the nature of the societal imports like mental and physical health care, education, welfare, customs and traditions in your country, the nature of the community surrounding you, the behaviors of parents you're born to, the immediate and extended family you're born into? We'll explore this further in a bit. In what ways might your childhood country and community impact you? You're born and raised in an environment that has a significant spiritual aspect or not, involves worship of a higher power or not, within an organized religion or not. How much control do you have over what beliefs prevail in your formative years? In what ways might the existence or non-existence of a spiritual experience impact you? You form multiple relationships while growing to adulthood, with parents, family members, friends, classmates, teachers, team members, coaches, romantic partners, coworkers, bosses, pets, neighbors, service providers, etc., etc. How much control do you have over whom you come into contact with, especially as a child, and the nature of their personality? In what ways might your relationships impact you? Here's a relevant quote from an unknown source. As children, we are not responsible for what happens to us. As adults, we are entirely responsible for fixing it. As children, we are not responsible for what happens to us. As adults, we are entirely responsible for fixing it. Throughout childhood, you learn ways you think best in the moment to respond or react to people and circumstances. The beliefs, thoughts, and behaviors you developed and habituated as responses were influenced, perhaps even determined, by your genetics and environment. So how responsible were you as a child for the influencers in your life that shaped you into your current self? The fixing bit in the quote, we'll talk about that later. Next up is a closer look at a particularly strong influence, family. You don't have to explain your family's parenting choices to anyone, but understanding their influence on you can foster your self-awareness, self-worth, self-esteem, and self-acceptance. As George Bernard Shaw said, If you cannot get rid of the family skeleton, you may as well make it dance. We all have family skeletons, discreditable, embarrassing, or shaming facts around family that we want to keep hidden in our closets. As long as you're trying to keep the skeleton secret, a part of you remains closeted up. When you bring the skeleton out of the closet, you become free to dance with, acknowledge, overcome, and perhaps at times even celebrate your family-influenced beliefs, thinking, obstacles, idiosyncrasies, strengths, and uniqueness. Whatever happened within your family sphere during your formative years has had a powerful impact on you, positively and negatively, healthfully and unhealthfully. Longitudinal studies show that a child's relationship with their parent or parental figure is the strongest indicator of success and happiness later in life, more so than wealth or education or geographic location. Perhaps you've heard how even birth position in the family, firstborn, middle child, or youngest, influences your personality and behavior. Here and now, we're not investigating how to interpret or address the influences family has had on your life. Rather, the present intent is to kindle consideration of the immense impact of family in shaping the person you are in the present, again, with no judgment, blame, or unacceptance attached. Only observation. In this talk, your family is to be considered as the group of people who lived together with you in a household during your life from pre-birth until you moved away from home. The group consists of you and your parents or parent or parental figures and may, but not necessarily, include grandparents, other adults, other children. You may have been the only child in your household and pets. You may have lived in more than one household if your parents or caregivers live separately. Here are a few of my personal observations of my childhood family environment. I grew up in a traditional family with my biological mother and father and siblings. I was born fourth in a family of nine children. My parents were religious and brought me up in their faith. Anger was not expressed in our family home. Timidity and passive-aggressive behavior were modeled and imitated in my home. Sex and sexuality were never a topic of discussion at home. Money was scarce, although our family never wanted for necessities. We had daily balanced meat and potato family meals at the dinner table, almost always with lively conversation. We had annual family vacations that I much enjoyed. Alcohol was regularly consumed in our house, sometimes excessively, a staple at special occasions and gatherings. All family members had regular household chores. Lots of pets were born and died in our home. I could go on and on with my observations, but this list serves the point of illustrating that I had a combination of family circumstances that no one else has exactly had, not even my siblings, at least partially because of their different birth order in the family. Your family influences are uniquely yours. These influences, these circumstances, and the way you have chosen and continue to choose to respond to the family circumstances have shaped you unlike anyone else has ever been shaped. I invite you to create your own list of observations around your childhood family environment. Think of them as neither good nor bad. If any emotions arise as you create your list, gently acknowledge the emotion. Don't engage it. Don't deny it or push it down. Just watch it pass across your awareness as if you are watching a white cloud sail across a blue sky. If, when you contemplate these influences and influencers, notice if anything rises to the surface that you might not have previously consciously considered. Were there any influencers you didn't even realize you weren't conscious of that have become influencers you at least now realize you don't know much about? Is there a particular influencer that you are interested in knowing more about so you can create the opportunity to let go of beliefs, thoughts, or behaviors that you developed in response to that particular influencer, but which no longer serve a positive purpose? An example of a circumstance or influencer from my own life that I shared earlier was, alcohol was regularly consumed in my house, sometimes excessively, a staple at special occasions and gatherings. It was only when I was in my 30s, with the assistance of a psychologist, that I came to see that many of the relationship challenges I was experiencing were attributable to alcohol and me not knowing it. I didn't recognize alcohol abuse when I was face to face with it because of my childhood conditioning. I thought their drinking to be in the range of normal. Once I knew what I was dealing with, I could begin recovering from codependency by implementing new behaviors, like attending Al-Anon and developing healthy personal boundaries. For years after finally recognizing alcohol abuse for what it was, I thought my earlier alcoholism blindness to be a flaw in my character that caused me and loved ones unnecessary pain. It was a flaw in the sense of unawareness, but I have lots more flaws to go with that one. But today, thankfully, I can see myself as flawsome, an awesome individual with flaws, like you, like everyone. You and I and everyone else are imperfect, flawed, cracked, because none of us was born with perfect genes and raised in a perfect environment by perfect adults. We developed imperfect responses to imperfect circumstances. And this brings to my mind the concept of wabi-sabi. Wabi-sabi is the Japanese idea of embracing the imperfect, of celebrating the worn, the cracked, the patinated, both decoratively and spiritually. Picture a cracked serving dish that's been repaired with gold so that the repaired dish becomes unique and even more beautiful than it was before it was cracked. When you accept unjudgmentally that you are cracked, so to speak, and with awareness you have the ability to repair your cracks, you'll see yourself as beautifully flawsome. Wabi-sabi nurtures all that is authentic by acknowledging three simple realities. Nothing lasts, nothing is finished, and nothing is perfect. As you proceed along your BU journey, your personal transformation towards authenticity, I invite you to bear this in mind. The current version of you will not last. You will forever be a work in progress, and you will never achieve perfection. How comfortable are you with unconditionally loving your imperfect, worn, and cracked self? In an alternate universe, maybe every child could be born into a healthy, happy environment without physical, mental, or emotional impediments so as to eliminate those cracks. That scenario would provide each child with what's referred to by psychologists as a secure base. I, being a lover of analogy, as well as a lover of wilderness, camping, and hiking, will use those loves to paint an image of a secure base. Picture in your mind, if you will, my small tent illuminated from within, underneath a star-strewn sky, amongst the trees, beside a placid lake. I can hear the frogs and crickets and crackling of the bonfire. I'm experiencing a sense of peacefulness, comfort, warmth, and security. It's the end of a satisfying day of wilderness hiking or canoeing. I've enjoyed a replenishing cook fire meal, and I'm now in my tent reading my book by the light of my headlamp, nestled under my sleeping bag, peripherally aware of quiet conversation of camping companions around the bonfire. I hear a loon calling. I'm feeling very happy and fulfilled. John Bowlby, a British psychologist with a focus on child development, said, "All of us, from cradle to the grave, are happiest when life offers us a series of excursions, long and short, from a secure base." In the camping scene I described, I said I was on an excursion that day. I might have hiked a 10-kilometer trail through beaver pond meadows along the edge of a lake up and down a forested mountainside, or I might have paddled and portaged through a series of calm lakes. Whatever my excursion, I would have been able to enjoy it immensely, because in large part I was able to bring with me necessities like layered clothing, extra socks, energy bars, and drinking water. And during my venturing, I always knew I had a campsite to return to where there'd be a warm fire, hearty food, hot tea, and a dry sleeping place. My needs were satisfied. Bowlby obviously was encompassing much more than hiking or canoeing excursions when he said, "We're happiest when life offers us a series of excursions, long and short, from a secure base." He was referring to life excursions: going to kindergarten, going for a sleepover, joining a team, traveling, leaving home for university, accepting a new work position, getting into or ending a relationship, delving into parenthood, investing financially, coping with injury or illness, changing careers, coming out, developing a business, running for public office, assuming a leadership role, retiring, moving. The list of life excursions is almost limitless. Just as with my camping analogy, when you have a secure base to head out from and to return to, you can venture out comfortably with confidence and exciting anticipation. Take risks, try new things, push your comfort zone, follow the pull you're feeling. As a child, your secure base is a happy, healthy home environment with the same characteristics I used in the campsite analogy. Peacefulness, comfort, warmth, and security. A secure base for a child is mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and physically nurturing. It's a fun place. It's a safe place from abuse and neglect and unhealthy role modeling. When a child's home is not a secure base, the child will lack self-confidence and self-esteem, will fear failure and feel shame. The child will not feel comfortable going on excursions and will make unhealthy choices. And this carries into adulthood. As an adult, your secure base is a happy, healthy relationship with yourself, meaning you have a solid base of self-love where you can find the provisions you need for successful excursions into other relationships and life opportunities, and to which you can repeatedly return for sustenance and recharging. Self-betterment, self-development, the BU journey is about creating that secure base as an adult, no matter the security level of your childhood base, so that you can strike out happily and with confidence when opportunities for excursions arise. A foundational component of the secure base of self-love you can create as an adult is the setting of healthy personal boundaries. I invite you to tune in for my talk on boundary setting in Episode 4, Better Me, Better World. I'll be back same time next week, same place here at CFRU 93.3 FM or CFRU.ca. The shows are recorded, so alternatively, have a listen when it works best for you. Until next time, be you. I'm Annie Gigg.